parts of Psalm 62 in our opening call to worship and in the beautiful anthem Christina offered, but hear now the psalm in its fullness. For God alone my soul waits in silence. From him comes my salvation. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall never be shaken. How long will you assail a person? Will you batter your victim, all of you, as you would a leaning wall, a tottering fence? Their only plan is to bring down a person of prominence. They take pleasure in falsehood. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. My hope is from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rests my deliverance and my honor, my mighty rock. My refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Those of low estate are but a breath. Those of high estate are a delusion. In the balances, they go up. They are together lighter than a breath. Put no confidence in extortion and set no vain hopes on robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them. Once God has spoken, twice I have heard this, that power belongs to God. And steadfast love belongs to you, O Lord, for you repay to all according to their work. May God bless our understanding of this sacred text, and I invite you to pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. So I say that prayer every time I preach. You probably know it by heart as well as I do. These words are the most grounding words I know. I cherish them. And yet, I don't know if I could tell you the last time I really thought about them. With today's psalm also giving us the image of God as a rock, I've been thinking about the metaphor more than usual. And, relatedly, I have also been thinking about my college geology class. I received a big fat C in that class, which was deeply distressing to this young perfectionist. I couldn't understand how I'd aced all the tests and the final exam, but walked away with a C as my semester grade. Right on brand, I made an appointment to meet with the professor. He calmly informed me that I had flunked participation because he noticed I slept through every single slideshow. It's true, the lights would go down and the pictures of rocks went up and my capacity to remain conscious was profoundly compromised. I had no idea that my slumped head and drool-slicked chin had been visible to my professor. I thanked him for his time and got out of there as quickly as I could. Here I am, bored to sleep by rocks, yet praying week after week to my rock and my Redeemer. A pastor friend said, "No one metaphor can contain all that is needed. No one metaphor can contain all that is needed." A flock of pastors had gathered to discuss the lectionary texts for this week. Another friend acknowledged that she was struggling to conceive of God as a rock. It is a hard metaphor, and yes, I totally intended that pun. I think I'm hilarious. It doesn't feel especially personal to say that God is a rock, especially when we're coming out of the seasons of Advent and Christmastide with all the emphasis on the incarnation. How do we go from God is a baby in a manger to God is a geode? Part of what makes this psalm so tricky is also what makes it so profound. Its messaging is diametrically opposed to the conventional wisdom doled out by the world we live in. Our culture encourages us to set our hearts on riches. The psalmist warns us that good fortune is fickle. Our culture wants us to believe we need a handgun and a state-of-the-art security system. The psalmist calls God our fortress and refuge. Our culture beckons us to believe that financial security is the ultimate good. The psalmist promises that God is trustworthy, dependable, rock-like. How can God be so trustworthy when half the people we know don't even believe in God's existence? How can God be so dependable when the people who do believe in God often can't perceive God's presence? What does it even mean to call God a rock? One of the pastors engaged in that conversation about the psalm accurately noted that rocks get worn and split and overheated and crushed up and melted and mixed with other rocks to form new rocks. There is no rock that is unchanged by that which surrounds it. I think he didn't sleep through geology. Again, no one metaphor can contain all that is needed. Yet, this is the gleaming, multifaceted, metamorphic metaphor the psalmist asks us to hold in our palms and consider in our hearts. And I am glad for it. As the painful countdown has begun to the day that I will no longer be one of your pastors, I can't help but think about what feels most important to preach from this precious pulpit. And this is certainly among the most critical truths. I need to hear it. You need to hear it. God alone is our rock and our salvation. God alone is our rock and our salvation. This is an invitation to trust, not just believe, to trust, to put our hope and our faith in the only thing worthy of our hope and our faith. Psalm 62 is, again, one of the lectionary texts for this Sunday, and the gospel lection with which it is paired is Mark's account of Jesus gathering his first disciples. He says to them, "Follow me." And they do. They follow him. They put their hope and their faith in the only thing worthy of their hope and their faith. It's very easy to convince ourselves that it's too risky and impractical to surrender ourselves completely to God. It's very easy to do this because it is risky and impractical to surrender ourselves completely to God. It means we have to acknowledge the terrifying fact about being human. We are not in control. Whether rich or poor, we are but a breath. Insubstantial and vulnerable. Susceptible to death and decay. Even as the psalmist is enjoining us to trust God. He does so in a context of pitfalls and perils. As he prays, he is victim to physical and emotional assaults. He is assailed, he is battered, he is bullied. If we think the point of trusting God is to guarantee that we won't be assailed and battered and bullied, we're getting it all wrong. We are seeing with the short-sighted vision of finitude, not the kaleidoscopic vision of eternity. One reader and scholar of the Psalms puts it this way. As the intersection of ultimate power and undying love, God alone is worthy of absolute trust and the foundation of persistent hope. By comparison, all other things are weak as reeds and erratic as the wind. Every human effort, finite cause, and mortal relationship is an unsuitable object for our ultimate trust and final hope. The career that shows such promise, the children that seem so exceptional, the nation that appears so strong, and I will add, this particular quote was written about 15 years ago. They are like shifting sand, which offers no security, no permanent purchase. There is no resting place for our hearts. No resting place for our hearts. No trustworthy object of hope and meaning other than God, who is all in all. Only in the light of this fundamental orientation toward God do these other commitments become valuable. Apart from it, family, work, nation, even church are simply delusions, according to the psalmist, or vanity, in the words of Ecclesiastes. So what struck me most about that reflection is the one line. It comes from St. Augustine. There is no resting place for our hearts quite like God. No resting place for our hearts but God. Oddly enough, it takes me right back to where we started, my college geology class. And here I thought it was just a silly anecdote. Maybe my inability to remain awake while examining photos of rocks was bad news for my GPA, but it sure has a certain poetry to it. Perhaps that classroom slumber pointed to the fullness of rest we experience when we entrust ourselves, body, mind, and spirit, to the source of our salvation. If you have ever spent a night wide awake with anxiety-induced insomnia, you know you'd give anything to surrender to sleep. If you have ever spent a day wide awake with anxiety-induced perseverating. Is it going to work out? Is she going to be okay? Are we going to make it? The psalmist gives us a prayer of surrender. For God alone my soul waits in silence. From him comes my salvation. May it be so. Amen.